Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to an Everything Iconic Pop Dive with me, Danny Pellegrino, where my guests and I take a break from talking housewives and current TV to dive into an iconic pop culture touchstone. Today we're diving into the 2003 holiday romance Love Actually. The film grossed over $246 million worldwide on a $40 million budget. It was written and directed by Richard Curtis and became a modern holiday classic with a stellar soundtrack and an all-star cast. The movie had multiple romances, some more successful than others, and was nominated for multiple BAFTAs and Golden Globes after its release. Viewing the Christmas classic has become a yearly tradition for many of us, and it taught us to get the shit kicked out of us by love. I invited two gay Matts, Matt Steele and Matt Palmer, over to discuss the legacy of the film, favorite moments, and so much more. This is an Everything Iconic pop dive into Love Actually.
Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals gate at Heathrow Airport. General opinion is starting to make out that we live in a world of hatred and greed. But I don't see that. Seems to me that love is everywhere. Often it's not particularly dignified or newsworthy, but it's always there. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, old friends. When the planes hit the Twin Towers, as far as I know, none of the phone calls from the people on board were messages of hate or revenge. They were all messages of love. If you look for it, I've got a sneaky feeling you'll find that love actually is all around.
Okay, guys, I'm here with Matt Palmer and Matt Steele, the two Matts, the two gay Matts.
That's us.
That is us, isn't it?
How are you guys doing?
I'm good. I don't know how Matt Palmer's doing, but I'm doing great.
I'm doing really well as well.
Look at us.
I know. What it's a good day.
Okay, kiki. I just felt like being really gay for a second. So Matt Palmer, you've been on the show before. You were on the Mariah Pop Dive.
Yes.
You're both huge Mariah fans.
I mean, of course. Me more so than him, but I've gotten him into
He's gotten Mariah. Me into it. After living with him for 6.5 years, it's worn off, and now I'm just as obsessed as he is.
Good.
Maybe not at you. You win.
I do, yes. Yeah. But you're a lamb.
Right. I am a lamb. I'm officially a lamb now at this point.
Yeah, you're part of the lamb-ily now.
Yeah, I feel great.
Everyone's been asking for a Mariah Part 2 Pop Dive, but unfortunately for music rights, we may not be able to do it. Or may have to go on, I don't know, Patreon or something. Mm-hmm. But for the people that are asking, that's why, Matt, you haven't been back. But so I wanted to have you back. And so I was like, what do you guys want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Love Actually.
I did.
Which is a holiday classic now.
Yes.
But rewatching it, we all rewatched it. Mm-hmm. And it's different now, I think.
I agree. It was like, I was telling you before that it read as a bit more depressing. And also there are things like that were very of its time. Like Matt Steele was like, there are no gay people. There was only one mention of gayness when Liam Neeson asks the kid, like, do you like a boy? And he's like, no, it's a girl. And then, like, oh, that was it.
Yeah. Which was nice.
Which was nice.
There was a really awkward transvestite joke.
Oh, yeah.
Emma Thompson gave, like, she, like, held up a doll and was like, this doll looks like a transvestite.
Oh,
and it's
yes.
like, ooh, didn't age well. But, you know.
Well, you know, I talked about this on Twitter. I was pissed because there was actually a lesbian storyline filmed.
Like I saw you just posted that.
Yeah, like the headmistress at the school, there was like a scene where she was like mean to Emma Thompson or the kids or whatever. And then the camera follows her to her house and she's taking care of her girlfriend who's dying of, I believe it's cancer or something. Mm-hmm. But her girlfriend's really sick and they have this lovely moment in bed where they cuddle and she's taking care of her. And it's revealed that this woman who was like the tough headmistress is actually like, you know, it's just going through shit at home and it's a beautiful scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, rewatching the movie, I'm watching it and I'm seeing this scene with the Martin Freeman playing the porn star with the girl, you know, this storyline's not connected. You know what I mean?
Not it's like at all. Not at all. Yeah.
And we're seeing these.
Although I think it's the most endearing one, really? Honestly. I think it. Oh, I do. I
oh,
love it. I think it's adorable.
No.
I disagree as well. I felt like it was homophobia at its finest because it's like there's not
a connection, a connective tissue with the story. And it's like, we lost the lesbian story.
There's a very thin connective tissue in that the PA on that thing is the friend of the British guy or whatever.
Yeah.
That's
come
it.
On, Matt. This guy is a director and has friends right. as well. But he doesn't have a love story.
No, he just has his weird friend who meets Alicia Cuthbert.
Wait, later. So what would you guys lose if in favor of the Les storyline, which I prefer over almost all of them?
Absolutely.
What would you prefer? If you had to get rid of one and replace it with the lesbians, what would you choose?
Name all of them. Name all of them.
We're going to go through all of them. God. Maybe we'll decide. I'll ask you again at that.
We'll go through and because
it's okay. Yeah. So I also want to say, like, even though looking back on this now, I still loved the movie. I still loved watching it. And I do think there's so much good in it. But hindsight's 2020 with everything, and we're in like a weird time in history now where it's like in the Me Too movement. Mm. And it's like, and so looking at love, relationships, romance through the lens of where we're at now, everything looks difficult. I just recently did a You've Got Mail pop dive, and it was like rewatching that it's difficult too. You almost have to shut all of the things you know off now.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of holidays, I mean, we're talking about the holidays, and it's like, I just heard Baby It's Cold Outside on the radio, and I was shocked that they're still playing it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, really, it's about sexual assault. But also at the same time, it's like, well, we have to kind of I don't know. It's a devil and angel. Like, are we able to enjoy this stuff? I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. I got in a fight with this girl at a party about Baby It's Cold Outside because I was like, this song
is... A fist fight?
I punched her. She punched me. It was great. No, but it was just like, that one song I feel like is over the line enough that I'm like, I don't need to hear this anymore. Even the Nick and Jessica version, which was on my holiday playlist, it's like, I gotta let it go. Like, this is just too much over the line. Love Actually is just kind of like, I'll wince and like feel a little uncomfortable, but like, this is fine. But
the overall message of Love Actually isn't problematic.
Yes.
The overall message of Baby It's Cold Outside is like,
it's questionable at best.
The overall message, speaking of, it's in the very first scene of Love Actually, like that airport scene, which I think is the most beautiful scene in the entire
film. Oh, it's fantastic.
I think it's flawless, perfect. It's such a good reminder that love is all around. And I like that we're just seeing average people. I think they just filmed that at the airport. And I don't think I could be wrong. I don't think when I was doing the research, I don't think there was any actors in it. It's just...
Yeah, there's just regular people. And the fact that it happened right at 2003, it was 2 years after 9/11. So like the fact that they sort of like brought that into it, it sort of made it feel very relevant at the time because airports current. Were such a very...
Were you able to still meet people at the gate in 2003?
In England, maybe. This is England.
Yeah, Heathrow.
So. Maybe Heathrow.
Do you remember the first time you saw this movie? Did you see it in theaters?
I did not. I saw it for the first time probably in 2007. I did not see it for the first time. Which still was a long time ago. I've only seen it once all the way through before watching it again 2 nights ago.
Really? Yeah. Oh, this is a holiday movie. God, I watch this every year. Yeah. Whenever I'm feeling festive. The last time I watched it actually was on a really bad date, but it's okay.
Nothing happened.
I was really trying with him, and it's like we weren't a match. It's okay. I wish him all the best in his future endeavors. But
I don't. I want to run through all of the love stories in the film, and then we'll just kind of chat through them.
Okay. Totally.
Normally we run through the movie like chronologically, but this movie's hard to do because they jump around so much.
Yes. Oh my God. I was just thinking like this movie must be an editor's nightmare.
Yeah.
Like just because I'm sure it's completely different from what was in the script, like the order that everything went in.
Right.
It must have been just such a headache to edit.
They tried to do a lot of these too, like these movies where there's like a million storylines. Like Gary Marshall did a bunch with the Mother's Day and New Year's Eve and Valentine's Day. And then He's Just Not That Into You tried to do it right shortly after Love Actually. And they never work very well.
No.
And I think it is hard to edit. And also I feel like you get like this movie somehow was able to like get enough emotion around these characters. But otherwise, I feel like you just spend so little time with these people that you can't develop any emotion for them. It's like they're sketches or something.
Right. I was thinking if you just split these all up into little things, they could be like 30-minute, it could be a mini series of just like 30-minute stories that come on every week before the holidays.
I think that it works for Love Actually, though, because any love story, as simple or as basic as it may be, people are going to find endearing or find some reason to connect to it. Whereas, I feel like in Mother's Day or Valentine's Day, like the plots were probably, I really haven't seen any of them.
I saw one of those in theaters.
And I feel like the plots would have to be a little more.
Did you? Which one is Taylor Swift in? With Taylor
She was in Valentine's Day.
I saw that one. Oof. Horrendous.
There's a romance between Michelle Pfeiffer and Zac Efron in New Year's Day, or New Year's Eve. And that one's shocking. It was like, what's going on here? And of course, I think Michelle Pfeiffer is one of the most beautiful people ever. Like, probably ever, I think. But still, and so is Zac Efron, but it's still like a shock to the system, like assault on the eye. It's like, what's happening? Like, it's just, yeah. I don't know what's going on, but I sort of love all of them. Even though it's like, I love them for being how terrible they are.
Right.
Yeah. And the fact that there's something to see, something to enjoy, right, as like cheesy as they may be, they're still fun to watch.
I like, yeah, he's just not that into you, like, legitimately. Oh,
and I like the idea of seeing all these stars on screen. Like, I get excited. Yeah. It's like, I don't care that Katherine Heigl and Sofia Vergara are on screen for 1 minute. Which also, there were reports that, like, Sofia Vergara and Katherine Heigl did not get along. I want that movie. Like,
oh my God, absolutely.
That should be a feud.
Like,
feud
that should season. Be a Ryan Murphy miniseries.
A new season of Feud.
Yes. I'm ready for it.
My friend Michael Ross and I, we saw, I think, New Year's Eve in the theaters, and the screenwriter's name is Katherine Fagot. And when the movie ended, it said, like, written by Katherine Fagot. And I remember we turned to each other and were like, well, Katherine Fagot to write a script. So every time, like, her name pops up in other movies, we just, like, text each other. Okay, so let's run through these love stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you guys like that cheesy joke? Forget I write a script. You guys like?
It works. It works. I would give it a solid 9 out of 10.
Okay, let's talk about Billy Mack. He's the singer. He recorded the song. He's recording a Christmas version of his old hit song. He's like a washed up singer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you think the new record compares to your old classic stuff?
Oh, come on, Mikey. You know as well as I do, the record's crap. But wouldn't it be great if number one this Christmas wasn't some smug teenager, but an old ex-heroin addict searching for a comeback at any price? All those young popsters come Christmas Day, they'll be stretched out naked with a cute bird balancing on their balls. And I'll be stuck in some dingy flat with my manager, Joe, ugliest man in the world, fucking miserable because our fucking gamble didn't pay off. So if you believe in Father Christmas, children, like your Uncle Billy does, buy my festering turd of a record and particularly enjoy the incredible crassness of the moment when we try to squeeze an extra syllable into the fourth line.
The song eventually goes to number one, which... it was Shades of Glitter. So Glitter just recently went to number one. And it was interesting to me. There is almost like this underground movement throughout the movie of justice for this song.
Totally.
And we just came from Justice for Glitter.
Oh, I wish I could talk about that, but I
please
won't.
Please do. Matt, you can talk about it. Please, what are your thoughts on Justice for Glitter?
I think it's so deserved. I saw that movie in theaters, had a whole gaggle of gays and straights with me in 9th grade. Lead the Way is one of her best vocal performances. The Allies, exactly. That's how I could identify them in 9th grade. And it just should be the number one album of all time because it is excellent and fun and perfect and... yes.
I literally cried the other day when I was reading about it. We're recording this right after the Justice for Glitter movement. And I literally, like, I don't know what it was, if I was just emotional or whatever, but I cried and I was like, how great. Like, she came through this such a dark place in her life. And then now the album's finally finally getting some justice.
Yes.
I cried.
It's beautiful.
Okay. So what do you make of this Billy? So his love story is basically with his manager.
Right. I wound up liking it, and I think when I first saw the movie, I was definitely like, oh my God, is he gay? Is he going to be gay for this manager? Is that what's happening at the end of there? But it wasn't, but I thought it was interesting that they shaded the band Blue. They're like because they're a real boy band. They're like a real English boy band, and they were just like, huh, well, you know, they're not good musicians or something. And I was like, I bet they were still around. I bet that hurt their feelings. But
I thought about when he talks about how Britney Spears was like rubbish in bed. Like, it's like a joke and everything. And it's kind of just like, this makes me feel sad because she was like, what? It was 2003. She was like 21 at the time. Like, she was like,
that was weird. And especially knowing what was coming for Britney.
I know.
That point, it's like, don't do that to Britney.
There was also, did you guys see the Love Actually sequel from last year?
I didn't watch it. I saw it happen.
So it's basically, we can talk a little bit more about it later, but it's basically like they recreate all the famous scenes, and it's sort of a sequel plus like a playing homage to the whatever. And there's a point where he's being interviewed and he mentions sleeping with the Kardashians, and it's like they reuse that joke.
Right. How did you feel about it?
I like that he doesn't give a fuck. Like, I love watching him in the interviews not giving a fuck and saying, like, this song is trash.
Right.
I really like it, actually. I think that I like how in all of these sort of coupling stories, there's one sort of solo guy, and his arc is about a song, which is makes it feel very Christmas. It connects Christmas and love as both as marketable things.
Right.
Yeah. I really like that storyline.
Also, his was arguably the funniest too. It was like he was the sense of humor throughout the movie.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
So I like that.
Totally.
Yeah. Sure. Liam. Okay. Liam Neeson and his son. And so Liam Neeson plays this guy who just lost his wife. And his son, he thinks something's wrong with his son. I think there's like a gay, he asks, you mentioned, did you already mention this?
I think so, but I don't know if it was before we were recording.
Yeah, I think it was before we were recording. He has a line about the son, but so he's wondering what's wrong with the son, and the son's just in love.
Mm-hmm. Truth is, actually, I'm in love.
Sorry?
I know I should be thinking about Mum all the time, and I am. But the truth is, I'm in love. It was before she died. There's nothing I can do about it.
Aren't you a bit young to be in love?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'm a little relieved.
Why?
But because I thought it would be something worse.
Worse than the total agony of being in love.
Okay, so what do you think of this storyline?
I liked it. I think I don't know if you need to cut this out because it's sad, but I found it hard to watch because his wife really did die in real life. And I was like, seeing this on screen makes me a little uncomfortable. It makes me think.
We don't have to cut that out, Matthew.
Yeah, that just shows you have feelings and emotions.
But this is an up podcast. I don't want to bring it down with my, you know, death thoughts. But it also felt like it reminded me of the movie About a Boy. And I love About a Boy. Like, what a great film. And so I felt like having a little About a Boy moment was nice. And, you know, also it started out kind of dark with him at the funeral, but like when it's like, oh, he's in love, like the little boy's in love, it like turned a corner and really was a bright spot for me. It was probably like top three favorite storyline. I was like very invested. And obviously when the little girl sang All I Want Christmas Is You, I was like, of course he's in love with her. Who wouldn't be?
I really love the sort of twist that like you think this is going to be a really depressing storyline because like his wife just died and everything. And then it's so cute because like the son, not that he didn't care that his mom just died, but like the fact that he's like, oh no, I'm still sad because of this wonderful thing. And that's the movie really. It's not a storyline that I'm overly invested in compared to the other storylines.
That's surprising.
But I understand why it's there, and I think it's very important.
Yeah. I want to talk about Olivia Olson, who plays the little girl at the end who sings the Mariah All I Want for Christmas Is You. She's fantastic and so cute. And I did my research, you know. Of course, I did my research on the Mariah stuff. Mariah wasn't licensing her songs at that time. This was 2003.
Yeah.
And she wasn't licensing All I Want for Christmas Is You for movies or TV, which now she is. It's on it plays on the Hallmark Channel and like, right. You know, it's all over the place and everyone's covering it. But at the time, no one was.
Right.
And so it was interesting to me that I was reading an interview with Walter. I don't know how you say his last name.
Afanasieff.
Yeah. Okay. So he co-wrote All I Want for Christmas Is You. And he said that it was actually a really big deal that she gave Love Actually the movie. She loved the script and everything. Mm. And so she gave them permission to use that song. And Walter was saying he thinks it sort of is one of the reasons why that song has become a modern holiday classic, because Love Actually also did. And at the time, it was the only time that song had been used outside of Mariah's version.
Right.
I
completely agree about Walter and saying, and I think it helped with the longevity of the song. It certainly was a huge hit before, but like, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to go top 10 every year until Love Actually.
Yeah. You know, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
BFD. Okay. So let's talk about Mark, Peter, and Juliet. So this is the Keira Knightley love triangle.
Which, funny, I just discovered that her name is not Keira Knightley.
What?
We were watching, what? And I kept saying, like, oh, yeah, Keira Knightley. And he was like, you're saying her name wrong. And I was like, what? Her name's Keira. And he's like, her name's Keira. And I was like, you're absolutely wrong. And I looked at the spelling because I always thought it was K-I-E-R-A. And I always thought people were saying Keira Knightley. And so he was like, no, it's Keira. And I looked at it, and I was like, it is.
It's
Keira.
Been so long that
for,
she's been a thing.
What, 2 decades? Like, I've been saying
I can't believe no one
Knightley.
Corrected you.
I mean, it's not like I talk about Keira Knightley on the daily basis. Like,
what were you thinking when you saw Bennett like Beckham?
I wasn't thinking Keira Knightley. Like, I was thinking Bennett like Beckham. Like, I don't know. I don't. I mean, I like Keira Knightley. I wish her the best, but like I can't even say,
I was gonna
Keira
say it's Keira.
I can't even say Keira anymore because in my head she's Keira Knightley.
Well, I feel like this storyline has like the most iconic scene in it with the cards, you know. Yes. But it was also rewatching it, kind of my least favorite.
I just think it's really fucked up.
It's like, so creepy. It's like so creepy. The wedding stuff where it's like the guy takes the video of her at her wedding, mm-hmm. and like she's watching the video back, mm-hmm. and it's all her. It's like, that's creepy as fuck. And she's sort of like, she's a little feeling like romantic about it. And I'm thinking, like, I'd be like, what the fuck? I just watched that show on Lifetime called You. Have you guys seen it?
No.
It's about like this crazy stalker or whatever. And so I just finished it and I was like, he's being like the guy on You. Like,
is that the one with Penn Badgley in it?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
He plays like this crazy stalker. I won't spoil. It's really good too, but it's messed up. And I'm like, why is she turned on a little bit from this? It's weird.
It's totally weird. And the end part when she actually, it's not even like she just accepts the cards as he's like showing them to her, Andrew Lincoln of The Walking Dead. But she then goes out and kisses him. It's like, that's cheating.
The kiss is
wrong.
Very much cheating. It's like, if they wanted to have a moment, then it should have been a hug.
Yeah.
Like, it should have been a hug.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
And then we're supposed to feel good.
Thank you, next.
Yeah. Thank
yeah.
you,
next. Yeah.
We're supposed to feel good because he's like, that's enough now. It's like, yeah, you've kissed your best friend's wife. That is enough, buddy. Like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I know. Go fuck yourself. Exactly.
My problem is, like, the storyline is such a mess. Like, it's such a creepy, weird thing that no one should support. However, I think it's the most creative one in the movie. It's the one that I'm compelled by it. Like, I am. Even though it's weird and creepy and terrible. Because the way it plays out, I think, is really creative and interesting.
I think it's just the carolers and the like signs that are like,
and I think the fact when she like watches the video and she realizes it's just her, like, I'm not compelled in a "ooh, I wish this would happen to me" way. I'm compelled in a like, oh, this is a creative way to tell a story from a writer's perspective. So what's also creepy about it is she was 17 at the oldest when she
young when she did this. Yeah,
it's weird. It's weird.
It's creepy.
Weird.
I also spend a lot of disbelief, but that whole thing, that whole storyline just weirds me out. I did some research and I learned that Keira you know how Keira is wearing that hat in that scene?
It was too
very Britney.
It was because it was covering a zit. Because she was so young, she apparently had a zit that was so big. This is what she just said recently in an interview. The zit was so big that they had to find some way to cover it up. Like, makeup wouldn't cover it. And they didn't have the CGI budget, I guess, but she put her that hat on.
That hat on. She had the hat and the two tendrils of hair.
The two tendrils covered half of her face in general. Like, those 2003 tendrils.
I want to get to my two favorite storylines. So we'll start with the first one. The Alan Rickman secretary.
I mean, it's tough. It's like, I think that's probably the most emotionally affecting me just because Emma Thompson, like, God, what a fucking actress.
Like, so fucking
she's
good.
She's so good.
That's why she's one of the greats.
I just was so moved and like seeing her try to like pull herself together after figuring it out.
So that scene, I think that's the best scene in the whole movie is when she gets the Joni Mitchell CD. She thinks she's getting the necklace that she saw her husband buy, and then it's revealed that the husband gave it to the mistress. Mm. And then Emma Thompson opens that Joni Mitchell CD.
Rip it.
What is it?
I'm going to rip it. All right, I'll rip it. God, that's a surprise.
What is it?
It's a CD. Joni Mitchell, wow.
To continue your emotional education.
Yes. Goodness. That's great.
My brilliant wife.
Ah. Yes. Actually, do you mind if I just absent myself for a second? All that ice cream. Darling, could you make sure the kids are ready to go?
All right, no.
I'll be back in a minute.
Moons and Junes. And fairies.
And I got fucking chills.
Oh my God.
And she goes in the other room and tries to hold it together.
The song playing in the background.
Right, that Joni Mitchell song, which they also just played in the Toy Story 4 trailer.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, in one of the teasers. They came out with a few Toy Story 4 teasers. And they play a different version of that song.
The dance remix.
I know.
I sang that song in high school choir, neither here nor there, but just
it's yeah. such a sad song.
It's so sad. And it's
but
beautiful.
When I saw that Toy Story 4 trailer, I was like, oh my God, I'm like shades of Love Actually. Like I'm just,
the moment where she like goes, where she's like, okay, I'm going to like straighten the bed sheets out. But then she like holds onto the bed to like brace herself. It's like, oh, you better act. Oh. You better act. Emma Thompson.
I know. I think at the time too, there was talk of her getting an Oscar. Did she get an Oscar nom? I should know
not
that.
For this. No, no, no.
I think there was talk of it though at the time. There was like,
I can imagine.
Because I'd the be movie was like a little indie and it was well received and stuff. I remember there being like talk of Emma.
Oh, she was excellent. And
maybe
also,
it was
like,
just me talking to my friends.
you were spreading the word.
Guys, Emma Thompson, FYC.
I also thought like the mistress was so overtly just like, I am a mistress. And it's like, who? Oh,
she was Cruella she DeVille was,
like,
at age 32.
It was so ridiculous. Like, it was so over the top. And also Alan Rickman in his scenes with Laura Linney read very gay to me. Like, it was very much like, you need to ask that man out. And so that was all hard to get around. But then, of course, Emma Thompson just like brought it all together.
My favorite thing about the mistress is like, you know, the art direction of like all of the apartments and everything were kind of natural and everything, but then the mistress's apartment was just insane. It was like she was living on the moon. Like her apartment was this bright purple, and I love how there's literally one scene of the mistress just taking off her clothes and
right.
her in her underwear to like show the world like she's a slut.
And it's like okay.
It's like all she's doing is getting undressed. Like it, like this yeah, doesn't yeah. reveal anything about her character all because
other
this
than,
is
other
we all
than
do.
She undresses at night alone. It was like she what was alone at the time
in this neon apartment right. of sin.
Apartment of sin. That's whole storyline. But so the lesbian storyline was supposed to be connected to that because it was like Emma's kids. Emma had a scene with lesbian. Mm. And you could find that scene on
R.I.P. that lesbian.
Okay, so my favorite storyline is the Laura Linney
storyline. Oh my God.
Like it's so fucking good. Oh, and that go ahead.
Going.
No, I was just gonna talk about Rodrigo.
Oh my God. That storyline is infuriating.
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 Like Laura Linney's of course plays this woman. She's in love with her coworker, played by Rodrigo, and she keeps getting calls from her disabled brother. And he keeps interrupting the romance. It's like every time she's about to get something, he interrupts. And it's so sad. It's heartbreaking and infuriating at the same time.
I don't understand how the brother has access to a phone.
Don't think what do you about mean? It too hard.
Like, how does he have access to
wait.
A phone? Like, why does the hospital... If I was Laura Linney, I would be like, do not give him access to a... I would tell the hospital, don't give him access to the phone.
You're so right.
He's killing me. I'm trying to have sex with Rodrigo, who's the hottest person in the entire movie.
She should have muted that phone call. I realized, like, she's being a lovely person, a great sister, their parents are gone or whatever, but like everyone deserves a little bit of something for themselves. And Laura Linney
something
is
Rodrigo.
And Rodrigo, hello, who's saying no to that?
When they kiss in the doorway and then she's like, can you hold on a minute? And then she I think that's like some of the and she goes to the other side of the wall and she kind of cheers. I feel like that the direction of that scene is so beautiful.
It's so great.
It's perfect.
It's the perfect
I feel like that was
represents...
in the trailer. For some reason that just it's like
it
was
whenever I think of Love Actually, I think of that moment in the trailer.
Yeah. I think of Rodrigo's thighs when he's wearing those those tiny black underwear in the scene when they're about to have sex.
Get it, Laura Linney. Like, I love Laura Linney.
This is very vulgar, but I wrote this in my notes. So I love those tiny black underwears. I wrote, his thighs are important. I want to put my head in them and I want him to strangle me with them. I'm fine with death if that's how I go. Oh, that's what I wrote.
Living my truth. I co-sign with all that.
I agree. Yes.
If that's how I go, that's how I go.
Like, I mean, I was born to his arms. I felt like his legs were like a little thin, not to judge.
Wow,
we
Matt.
Love everyone.
That's a wrap on Matt Palmer here. Wow.
I just felt like his upper body was 10 out of 10. No?
I didn't expect this Rodrigo thigh hate speak.
True. I'm sorry for that.
Also in that scene is the Eva Cassidy song. Do you guys know that song, Songbird? That's the song that
played. I mentioned that song when it was playing. That's what I love that song.
It's
I think
so
that song
beautiful.
Is so beautiful.
I don't know it. Is it Mike missing out on this song?
Yes.
Okay, you're also missing out on Eva Cassidy in general. She's unfortunately passed away, but her story is it's a beautiful story. So she used to perform in clubs, and I believe it's from DC. I read there's a book about her, but she famously died really young. But you can listen to her covers of like Somewhere Over the Rainbow. You know, Catherine McPhee did it on Idol, like that slow. That was Eva's arrangement.
I remember when Catherine McPhee did it, and like people were just like, "That is a ripoff of." Right.
I mean, it's and she also did. She has a cover of Time After Time, Fields of Gold, her, look her up. I mean, you will love her. She's Time After Time. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Her Time After Time is like stunning. And Songbird was one of her, like, arguably her like hit or people that, you know her from that.
Yeah, right. I love that song.
But she famously did like different slower arrangements of other songs. And her vocals are amazing. But that's a song that plays while they're not having sex. Like know the score.
I also love the Laura Linney, and there's a brief moment where Laura Linney is dancing to like contemporary music, and for some reason it's the funniest thing in the entire world. When like her and Rodrigo go to dance.
Oh, I think it's Justin Timberlake, Like I Love You, okay. Right before the music magically and, like, changes to being
like,
slow.
You just like, for some reason Laura Linney dancing is something I never, that doesn't work to me. Like something I never
an assault on the eyes.
Like it's so bizarre and just lovely. I love her. It made me love her.
I also think she's Helen Hunt, which is neither here nor there.
Right. No, I mean, it's an honest mistake.
Yeah.
I was thinking there's so little visibility for disabled people in TV and movies. Mm. I was just talking about this with someone. And so it was weird. I had just had the conversation. It's like we so rarely see anyone disabled in any sort of TV or movies.
That's true. Yeah.
And it was nice to see that in Love Actually. So for all its flaws and everything, it's amazing. I sort of wish that it wasn't a story. I wish her section of the movie wasn't necessarily about him being disabled and ruining her life. But it was visibility.
I mean, that's just got in my head, like, what if he had like a little love story in his
It would have been beautiful.
It would have been beautiful. It
like, yeah.
And, I think,
and then I feel like Laura Linney's story wouldn't have ended so tragically.
I know.
Like, that's the only one that ends.
I don't understand, like, why in almost every form of media, it's like there's nothing, like, in any form of disability, like, whether we're talking about anything.
Yeah.
It's just, like, we don't see it on screen at all, and I wish there was more.
I agree.
But Love Actually had it.
Yeah!
Okay, I want to move on to Hugh Grant as the Prime Minister. What did you gay gasp for? Matt Palmer just clutched his invisible pearls.
I mean, hashtag justice for glitter.
Justice for Natalie. I think Natalie, outside of Emma Thompson, is the best actress in the movie. She lights up the screen whenever she comes on. And I just, like, whenever anything would happen with them, I just, like, would have heart eye emoji. Like, I just was so in love with their love. And, like, I realize Hugh Grant is, like, questionable IRL, but, like, he's a charming person. Like,
well, that's why he's always so great in these movies, is because he's charming on screen.
Yes. Yeah. And I just really loved they're my favorite story.
Their story to me is, there's such a simplicity about it, but it's so interesting because it's so simple, yet he's the Prime Minister of England.
Right.
So I think it works. I think that plot line works really, really well in the movie.
One of the things that didn't work for me was that his sister is Emma Thompson. And
that's,
I thought,
weird, yeah.
I thought, shouldn't she live somewhere nicer if he's the Prime Minister? Like, yeah. I know, like, maybe you shouldn't give the family all the money, but it's like, I feel like she should live somewhere nicer.
Right. I also feel like, and I promised a friend when I told her I was going on this podcast, because on this podcast that I'd mention it, the fat jokes for Natalie were a lot.
They were
like, this girl is in no way fat. And they were always like, oh, her thighs. And it's like, that's literally what the body type anyone wants.
And this is coming from someone who just made fun of Rodrigo Santoro's thighs. All of a sudden, Matt, you change your tune. Now you're sticking up. You're like, no body shame. And just literally 5 minutes ago, you were like, I thought his thighs were too thin. You're like, I don't really like his thighs. And now you're like, oh.
Even Natalie's family, like,
I know,
like,
they called her chubby or something.
Yeah. She's not chubby in the size. You could tell casting was just like, hey, let's get a girl with like a round face.
She's literally like, thin. Like, I don't even think she's not even chubby. She's thin. And I bet you in real life, we'd all be like, wow, you need to gain some weight.
Same. Oh my God, I bet she has a rockin' body.
And I looked up all of her credits after this, and I feel like everyone in the movie has a bunch more credits post Love Actually, and Natalie is not getting cast enough. She's in TV movies and shorts, and I feel like that's great. That's, we love everyone, but I need her to be amazing.
A star.
He looked up Rodrigo. He was like, he better not have more credits than Natalie, and like he did, and he was like, shit. And then he looked up like the Portuguese. What she's? The Portuguese girl. He's like, she better not have more credits than Natalie, and she does. And then everyone was like, shit. He would just look up all these like random characters.
You IMDb the whole cast.
Natalie's my queen. I just want more for her.
Yeah, justice for Natalie.
Yeah, justice.
She can have a comeback. Let's find
her. Looked up Rodrigo's age because I was curious how old he was, because I've seen him in other things. He was in like that. What's that Viking movie? 300?
300,
yeah.
They're not Vikings.
What was that? I'm so gay. I'm like that Viking movie. Medieval times.
The thing is, if you were to ask me what the people in 300 were, I would be like pirates.
No, that was based on the medieval times restaurant, right? Like that's what I assumed. But he was 28 when he filmed it. FYI,
great.
So he was the prime minister. There's a lot of weird little pop culture references. You mentioned the song, so Justin Timberlake's song plays, and there's like a lot of contemporary music at the time, which I don't think necessarily. I love all the music in it, but there's a few choices where it's like it feels a little too of its time. Mm-hmm. Like I wish they would have chose more timeless things. Like I don't think they should have used like I Love You, but whatever. But he mentions Harry Potter.
Yeah.
He mentions
And
David.
Everyone laughs. Everyone's like, ha ha, that's silly Harry Potter. That will never be a big thing. It's like,
oh, okay. He also mentioned David Beckham, which I had a sex dream about him recently.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. It was very...
It's a good day.
I know. I like literally woke up and I followed him on Instagram and like searched photos.
The scary thing about the Hugh Grant plotline for me was the Billy Bob Thornton as the American president,
right?
Which, like, when it, I'm sure at the time it was like, oh, look at this ridiculousness.
Well, no, Billy I feel Bob like Thornton it was supposed to be like a George W. kind of thing.
Yeah, but it reads a little more now as something else. Wait. Feels real. that feels a little too
real. Oh, see, I didn't pick up on that.
Oh, I feel like it's more, I felt like it was a take on George W. and less on the current disaster.
Well,
like we're not naming names.
We don't know who it is.
At the time, it definitely, I feel like, was supposed to feel more like a George W. thing. But knowing Billy Bob Thornton's personality, people would have watched at the time and been like, oh, this is ridiculous. This would never happen. Because Billy Bob Thornton is such a larger than life, you know, character who in no shape, way, shape or form, who has the personality temperament to ever be president. So I feel like him being cast as the president at the time was seen as like a funny thing. Like, oh, this is kind of ridiculous. And now it's kind of like, oh, wait, no, that actually happened now. Right. And I just want to talk about Billy Bob Thornton's ties were really.
But now we said it.
Like I'm sorry, because there were certain wardrobe things that were really aggressive to me, and Billy Bob Thornton's ties were number one on that list. Mm. Did you pay attention to those ties?
I truly did not even clock
them. They were a slap across the face.
I mean, they were just big and bright, and I feel like it just fit the character.
They were aggressive.
Big. I'm sorry. It just like really upset. Like they made me really uncomfortable, and I needed to close my eyes.
Write in a journal about it. Like,
let it out. This is the burn book.
Like the knots of the ties were like as big as his head, and it was.
Now I need to rewatch it again.
You really do, because the wardrobe choices all made sense except for like tiny hints here and there.
You know, I kind of, speaking of wardrobe, obviously I loved Rodrigo's underwear, but also I was very troubled by Emma Thompson's wardrobe in the movie because they make her look so dowdy. Yeah. And it's like, I know that she's playing like this, you know, matronly, whatever, but it felt too matronly.
Yeah.
Because Emma at the time even was like,
yeah, she's a stunner.
And she's beautiful too.
Yeah. And she's also the prime minister's sister. Like,
it's like we're throwing her in
some nice wardrobe.
A Talbot's oversized jacket. It's like, come on.
Yeah. And like her husband was like
Lane
rich,
Bryant.
Like CEO. I don't know what he did. He was the boss of something. Like they had money. He bought that big old necklace.
I know.
For someone else.
He had money for that Joni Mitchell album.
Icons. If you're anything like me, you love to spend TV commercial breaks browsing real estate listings. Now, I love watching my favorite shows and also looking up homes, especially the ones that I know that I can't afford. And my favorite app to use is Redfin. When Matt and I were looking for a home, we used the Redfin app to search for homes in the area and within our budget. The Redfin app made it super easy. Now, Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes and sends you personalized recommendations. So finding the home that's perfect for you has never been easier. Plus, if you see something you like, you can book a tour straight from the app. And when you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With the listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So Redfin made it so easy to filter out the homes that didn't meet or have the necessities I wanted. I still use it to search for homes close by and in the cities my favorite reality TV stars live. Download the Redfin app to get started. Ever since I saw Clueless, I wanted to have the most amazing wardrobe, and that includes all of the clothes inside the wardrobe closet, and that's why I'm excited to talk to you about Quince. Now, Quince has you covered with truly timeless pieces that never go out of style. You'll have them in your closet forever. Quince has all sorts of must-haves. I'm talking Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50. I have a blue cashmere crew neck sweater I got from them that I get so many compliments on all the time. I love it. Plus, iconic 100% leather jackets and versatile flow-knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes us savings all over to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. Love that. Makes you feel good about shopping with Quince. Again, I've gotten a lot of stuff there. Just good quality pieces and a lot of different options if you're looking to upgrade your wardrobe. So indulge in the affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/iconic for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, quince.com/iconic to get free shipping and 365-day returns, quince.com/iconic.
Okay, so let's talk about the cater waiter. The guy who just wants
worst,
to be in love.
Boo.
Storyline's bad, right?
I want that out.
Wait, the
that
cater feels, waiter?
Who's yeah,
that?
Like the...
The British guy.
The one who's going to America.
Alicia Cuthbert's friend.
Oh, yeah, he disappears for like a long, long, long time. Yeah, it's...
He's got like the thinnest. Although I wouldn't want to lose his storyline because we do get an appearance from Denise Richards.
Oh, right, right at the end.
This is Harry.
Ah, really pleased to meet you.
Hello, Harriet.
I hope you don't mind. I sort of brought my sister to stay. This is Carla. She's real friendly.
Hello, you must be Tony.
I heard you were gorgeous.
This is newest great, Beverly Hills Housewife.
Her greatest film role.
It's funny because when I watched the movie in 2007, that's the storyline that I remembered the most, kind of. Not the most. Like, I remember the Emma Thompson the most and Laura Linney the most and everything. But if you were to ask me the three plots I remember the most, like, that would have been the third one.
Were you a big Shannon Elizabeth fan?
No, I don't care at all. Like, for some reason... If you were to ask me the plots of Love Actually before I rewatched it again 2 days ago, I would have been like, oh, yeah, there's Emma Thompson in this and Laura Linney in this. And then, oh, and there's a guy who's British, but he wants to find a girl. So he moves to America. So they'll be obsessed with his British accent like that for some reason. And then I went watching it again. I was like, oh, my God, he's like not even in the movie. Why is this the thing I remember so much?
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, we talked a little bit about Martin Freeman as the porn star.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the most disconnected from the movie I get. Like, it just doesn't feel... But you guys liked it.
Well, he liked it.
Be clear.
I was with you, like... Also, because I was talking about it, I always remembered it as them being porn stars. But then in rewatching, in this big, they were in like this huge room. They were stand-ins in a sex scene, right? Because they weren't even
They're stand-ins.
Yeah, they're stand-ins. Really,
I said porn star, but
right. Yeah. But I mean, that's what how I remember.
They might
it
as
too.
Well.
They, I just remember when I first watched it, I was a young person, and I, you know, was always very prudish growing up. I've evolved, but I was very much like. I would like fast forward to those scenes because like this is inappropriate.
Right. Well, I did too, and I remember trying to watch this with my mom. Like, years after it came out, like probably around 2007-ish or whatever. My mom had never seen it. I was like, let's watch it. But then also, I remember thinking like, it's that storyline that I feel like makes it uncomfortable for me to watch with my mother.
It makes it not like a family viewing. Yes.
That's why I don't.
I agree about that.
It is a holiday classic and everything, but it's like if that would have been edited out, which it is edited out in airings or whatever.
Oh yeah,
on TV.
I think that first of all, stand-ins like they don't have if they have a stand-in for a sex scene, like they don't get naked. Like that's not a thing that happens.
I know.
Mm-hmm. I like that's so wrong, you know? And so I feel like if they were just supposed to be stand-ins for like sex scenes or whatever, it would have worked.
I mean,
if they were
just
fully clothed.
True,
and,
but
like,
I get why they did
it,
the whole thing
of
they're like, oh, our meet cute is like so aggressively sexual.
Yeah.
Like, and then we're just gonna go on like a very PG date. Like it's cute. I get why they did it. You gotta suspend your disbelief a little bit, Matt Steele. Like I can't be too focused on the
details. I think it would have been better if I think it would have worked just as well if they were clothes. Like, I don't understand why they had to, like, do that.
Yeah. Why they had to be topless. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, if we're going to see a boob, show me a male ass.
That's true.
Of course. Where is the
equal opportunity?
And we saw a couple of boobs, didn't we?
We saw Laura Linney's boobs. I forgot we saw Laura Linney's boobs.
Yeah.
This is a movie where I don't know why we need boobs, but sure.
Exactly. It's like this. We're trying to do a holiday. I don't know if at the time they were trying to do a holiday classic, but if for a holiday classic, like, I don't need the nudity.
Right.
Any other situation, I want the nudity. And I would be fine with nudity if it was male nudity. I
think
I would, if it was Rodrigo naked, I think I'd be happy.
It's just more of kind of like a question is like, oh, why did they feel the need to do that? Yeah. After this, you know?
What about Colin Firth and...
Well, okay. There was an issue with this storyline in my viewing because I'm not, please don't report me, but I pirated this movie because wow. I wanted the Blu-ray version and the pirated version didn't have the subtitles in it. So when we were watching this storyline, we were like, I don't know what's
happening. Oh, so you don't even know what happened.
Yeah, I can gather, like, he was writing something and they went to the water and she was basically saying, like, oh, this better be great. And he's like, it's not Shakespeare.
The water scene was just obviously an homage to the It Takes Two scene between Kirstie Alley and Steve Guttenberg when they're in the lake. And I felt like it was a blatant ripoff.
Wow.
But it was a good homage.
I think they're cute, and I get the Colin Firth a thing, and like maybe I would feel differently with the subtitles on, but like...
if you had actually understood the storyline.
I don't know. I was never fully moved in
me
that
either.
Story,
I didn't love
you know?
The storyline.
I think it's a great storyline, but I think it's a storyline that requires more time with them. Mm. Like where you actually see them like figure each other out and fall in love and everything. But in a
because it moves so quickly. Yes. Like this out of all of them, it felt like the relationship that was sped through the most.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you get what they're going for here, but it just didn't.
And that's the trouble with a movie like this. It's like you can't spend a lot of time with these couples, so it is hard to develop anything. And like we mentioned those other movies, the fact that they were able to get us to have an emotional connection with any of these stories is like a feat.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So did I miss any of the other love stories?
Oh God.
I don't think I did.
So? I'm sure there are like some tiny like things in there that you know.
What about Rowan Atkinson, who's of course Mr. Bean,
the most random cameo ever.
I know he's got a little scene. He has a little scene in the sequel. So the sequel is called Red Nose, actually. Uh-huh. Red Nose Day, actually, and it's like a 17-minute short. They got the entire cast.
That's impressive.
They did it. They did it overseas and did not have a Laura Linney scene, and then they were able to get her, and when they aired it in the U.S., they had a Laura Linney scene.
Oh, great.
So it's cute, but it is just like, the concept of it is great because it was raising awareness for Red Nose Day, and I feel like if they're going to do a sequel, it seems like the best way to do it. It's like they just kind of got everyone to be reminded of these scenes, and so it was cute.
The Rowan Atkinson cameo, though, because like he's in the scene where he's like trying to do the jewelry thing and taking his time making the box or whatever he was making. But then he's also in the airport at the end where he goes in front of the little boy to block him so the little boy can run onto into the gate and everything. So I feel like he was supposed to be in the movie more as sort of like a love guardian angel type thing to sort of help the characters be where they were supposed to be and everything. Like he was supposed to prevent the husband from getting the necklace, and he was there to help the kid and everything. So I feel like that's sort of something like he was cut out more. I want to know the story behind that.
I'm sure there was a ton cut out actually, because I wonder what they filmed, and I would love to read the script, like just to see what the original script was, because I'm sure they had to cut it down substantially.
I mean, they had to cut out a whole storyline, the lesbian
plot. So I had some questions. We sort of already answered these. We talked about the music. There was Maroon 5, Kelly Clarkson, Dido, Mariah's song. I feel like all of the music in the movie was... And we already talked about that. I'll cut this out. We talked about other movies that have done multiple storylines. Oh, I want to talk about Richard Curtis, who wrote and directed this movie. So he also did About Time, Notting Hill, and Bridget Jones 1 and 2. What is your favorite out of those films?
The only one of those films I have seen is Bridget Jones 1. So I'll say that.
Oh my God.
Which I think is great. And I love Renee Zellweger. So.
Need to go watch About Time. Have you heard of it? It's with Rachel McAdams.
I've heard of
About Time. Wait. Is it with Eric Bana?
No, that's the Time Traveler's Wife. She's done a lot of. Rachel's taken on a lot of roles where there's a time traveling element.
Right.
But About Time is like one of the. It's so fantastic. And the guy who plays Billy Mack, like the singer,
he is.
Like the dad in the movie. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. Like, I love it. And for some reason, it just kind of went. That's weird.
Like, what year are we talking?
I want to say maybe like 2012-ish.
Okay.
Around that time. But it's so good. And then he didn't do Bridget Jones's Baby, part 3.
I heard that was a crazy movie.
I loved it. But I loved it. But no, I think I'm the only one who likes it. I like love Bridget Jones's Baby. And Emma Thompson, she did like script rewrites on it. She's a credited
co-writer
on that. She's a great writer.
I love Notting Hill. Just throw that in.
She has two Oscars, one for acting, one for writing.
What's the writing one?
She wrote Sense and Sensibility.
Oh,
yeah.
She's a brilliant writer.
Yeah, she's great.
Any other final thoughts on this movie?
I mean, I think it holds up. Obviously, we pointed out a few flaws and things that we would have maybe changed if we had the chance. But I feel like more than anything, it captures the holiday spirit. It makes me feel good. I very much am more in the mood for Christmas than I was before. So I think it succeeds on that level. And that's kind of all you can ask, you know?
See, I'm going to say something a little controversial.
Oh, God. Here we go.
I don't see it as a Christmas movie.
You see it just as a straight-up romance.
Like a romantic comedy movie.
Interesting.
I'm also the type of person who watches holiday movies not on the holidays. Like, I watch Hocus Pocus any time of year. I grew up watching Home Alone any time of year. So I've never seen it as a Christmas movie. I mean, you see the Christmas parts and you're like, ooh, Christmas. This makes me feel Christmassy. But I've always seen it as more of a romantic comedy than a Christmas movie.
What do you see as a Christmas movie then? Is there something where you're
stuff that's about Christmas,
like Elf or something,
actively about Christmas, like a Christmas story, something like that?
But you said Home Alone. Do you think Home Alone is a Christmas movie?
I don't even consider Home Alone a Christmas movie. To me, Home Alone is like a comedy that when you watch it, it kind of feels like Christmas, where it's centered around the Christmas season, but it's not it is about Christmas. I don't know. Maybe it's just because as a kid, I would pop in Home Alone every 3 weeks or whatever. And I would literally watch it all the time. So I've sort of learned how to separate myself
from the holiday.
Matt
Palmer, do you have a favorite Christmas movie?
Love Actually.
It's your favorite.
I'm not a movie head, to be honest. Sure. Before Mean Girls came out, I was like, movie schmovie, give me a TV show. And so Love Actually is the one that has stuck with me. And I would argue it is absolutely a Christmas movie. So
yeah, I love all the holiday stuff. I watch them all. I love the Santa Claus. I love Elf. I love Home Alone, both Home Alones.
Elf,
first two, rather.
Oh, the Home Alones are,
excellent. So good. So you boys, tell me about your show.
Oh.
Wait, are there other, there's no other Love Actually thoughts, correct?
No, I like The Trouble of Love. The Trouble with Love Is by
Kelly Clarkson song.
Great movie. Finale song.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about the show.
So we have a YouTube channel. It's called Two Gay Mats. It is myself and Matt Steele, and we talk about a lot of musical theater things and pop music things, because I love pop music, he loves musical theater. And when we first started, I didn't know a lot about musical theater, and he didn't know as much about pop music, and now we both know a good bit. I feel like we've learned a lot. It's really a learning show.
It really is, and we've learned a lot through it, and I feel like our followers, because we have a group of followers that are, pop music heads, and another group of followers that are, musical theater fans, and they write in the musical theater fans will comment in the pop music section and be like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh my goodness. So that was the sort of concept of the show, is the fact that we are both roommates, both gay, both named Matt. We come from two completely different backgrounds, and we're coming together talking about our favorite things.
I love that. Now, Matt Steele, you haven't done this show before, but I always ask everyone what their favorite Mariah song is. So you said you're a new lamb. So what's your favorite?
My favorite Mariah Carey song is, my top five changes all the time, but I think solidified as my number one is Whenever You Call.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Brian McKnight version or the
The Mariah version. We love Brian McKnight, but
I feel like it was We Belong Together.
But now that I've delved more into
her catalog
and everything, when we first met, it was like, oh, we belong together, but now I think it's a solid Whenever You Call moment.
And where can people find you on social media, and where can people find your show?
They can find it on YouTube, Two Gay Mats, and we're social media everywhere together. Two Gay Mats, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and you can find me, Matt Palmer Music.
Have you guys ever had a romantic moment between the two of you? I'm always interested by people that the gays that work together.
No. We're
just curious. We're
like brothers almost. It would just be weird. It was never on the table.
No.
Okay, good. Yeah. And wait, Matt Steele, where can people find you on social media?
People can find me at it's Matt Steele on Twitter and at Instagram.
All right. Well, boys, thank you so much for coming over. This was so fun.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming.
Merry Christmas. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Please find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter and Instagram. on Facebook. It's facebook.com/PellegrinoDanny. Please join the Everything Iconic Facebook group. And if you want to support this podcast and get access to the bonus episodes, please head on over to patreon.com/EverythingIconic. Again, that's patreon.com/EverythingIconic. And click the Become a Patron button to donate $4 or more. If you donate $4 or more per month, you get access to all the bonus episodes. And more importantly, the money just helps to support this show. So thank you, all the patrons that are over there. If you get a chance, please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. If you listen on Stitcher, that would be wonderful. If you could give us a good review, I would love it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Let's do a little cool down. Everyone take a deep breath in. Hold it. Breathe out. Take a deep breath in again. Hold it. Think about your favorite Christmas memory. Favorite Christmas memory. Breathe out. Now, hopefully that Christmas memory involves someone else. If not, you know, pat yourself on the back because you created an amazing Christmas memory all by yourself, but which that's impressive. And, you know, honestly, sometimes my favorite memories are when I'm alone, but hopefully if there was someone else in that Christmas memory, just reach out to them and let them know that you were thinking about that wonderful Christmas moment. I love you guys so much. We'll be back on Thursday with a new episode. And then next week we will be off. I will be off. So for the holiday. So I love you all so much for listening. Kisses. Bye. Oh, and for those of you asking, I am trying to get to the Atlanta recaps. This week we will have Vanderpump, and I'll try to get to Atlanta and Jersey as well. But now that Dallas and Orange County are out of the way, we can incorporate some more Housewives into the regular episodes. So again, thank you guys so much for listening. I love you. Kisses. Bye.